screens in a late night lab. Numbers glow where the quiet answers hide.
Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. So, if you give a man and a woman the exact same dosage of the exact same medication for a severe infection, you might actually be saving one life and, well, completely failing the other.
Right, which is a terrifying thought when you realize how standard treatments are usually prescribed.
Yeah. I mean, we've always blamed hormones, we've blamed lifestyle differences, and, you know, sure, we've made plenty of jokes about the man flu. But what if the instruction manual for human survival is actually printed in two entirely different biological languages?
It really forces us to reconsider, well, almost everything we think we know about medicine. I mean, think about the fact that roughly 80% of all people suffering from autoimmune diseases right now are women.
Wow, 80%.
Yeah, 80%. That is an enormous, glaring disparity that the medical field has observed for decades, but we just haven't had a foundational mechanical explanation for it until very recently.
Right, we accepted that the sexes experience illness differently, treated the symptoms, and left it at that. But today, we are throwing that passive acceptance out the window.
Exactly.
But before we get into the weeds, today we celebrate the work of the international research teams behind the 500FG and 300TZFG cohorts, who have really advanced our understanding of human immune genetics.
Yeah, their work is absolutely foundational to what we're talking about today.
It really is. Okay, let's unpack this. The mission of our deep dive into the source material today is to explore a groundbreaking 2026 paper from the journal Human Genetics and Genomics Advances, because this research uncovers the hidden genetic architecture explaining why male and female immune systems are wired completely differently, like at the most microscopic level.
What we are looking at here is definitive proof that human biology just cannot be treated as a one-size-fits-all model. And, you know, more importantly, it shows that by averaging men and women together in research, we have likely been masking massive scientific breakthroughs for 20 years.
That is wild. But, okay, before we get into the heavy genetic data and the DNA typos, we really need to understand what exactly is being wired differently in the body. And to do that, we have to talk about cytokines.
Right, the communicators.
Exactly. I was trying to visualize this earlier. If the immune system is a massive group chat on your phone, the cytokines are the actual emergency text messages flying around in that chat.
I love that. That is a much better way to look at it. Cytokines are basically these small proteins that act as the primary communicators for your immune system. They dictate the growth, movement, and activity of your defensive cells.
Right. So when a pathogen, like say a bacteria, a virus, or a fungus enters your body, the cytokines are the all caps texts saying, send the fire trucks. And that triggers inflammation to attack the bug. Or, you know, on the flip side, they send a text saying, threat neutralized, stand down, which is your anti-inflammatory response.
Yeah, exactly. And observational data has told us for a really long time that men and women manage these emergency text messages differently.
How?
Well, generally speaking, women possess a much stronger, more hypervigilant adaptive immunity. Like, females actually show lower susceptibility to viral infections like hepatitis B, hepatitis C, and they generally have less severe outcomes when contracting viruses like COVID-19.
Let me guess the evolutionary angle here.
Yeah.
Because if women are biologically tasked with carrying pregnancies and passing initial antibodies to infants, their immune systems had to evolve to be, well, incredibly aggressive against invaders to protect two lives, not just one.
Right.
But that hypervigilance is a double-edged sword, right? Which brings us right back to that 80% autoimmune statistic you mentioned. Their bodies are so primed to attack threats that they sometimes just attack their own tissue.
You've hit on the exact evolutionary trade-off, but the mystery has always been the how. Like, how does the body actually know to turn up the volume on a woman's immune response but keep a man's at a different baseline? The actual genetic rulebook, the DNA code that dictates who sends what message in that cytokine group chat, has historically been studied without separating men and women at all.
Wait, really? So science has mostly just clumped male and female genetic data together into one giant pool and hoped for the best?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, the standard practice in large genetic studies has often been to control for sex mathematically as a variable. Researchers would say, okay, we know sex is a factor, so we'll add a little mathematical weight to account for it. But they still ultimately pooled the physical data together just to get a larger sample size.
Oh, I see.
This sex-agnostic approach assumes that a genetic variant acts the fundamental same way in a male body as it does in a female body.
But obviously, A biological environment flooded with testosterone is fundamentally different from one flooded with estrogen. The cellular environment itself is entirely different.
And that is the crux of why this new study is so revolutionary. What's fascinating here is that the researchers realized treating human genetics as a single monolith was a huge mistake. They needed to look at the data as a tale of two completely separate populations.
But you have to wonder, if they just looked at a group of people from one town, maybe any differences they found would just be a quirk of local genetics or environment, right? How did they prove this is a fundamental trait of the human species?
That's the beauty of their methodology. To ensure their findings weren't just a local fluke, they looked at two entirely distinct geographically separated populations. They utilized the 500 FG cohort in the Netherlands, representing Western European ancestry, and the 300 TZ FG cohort in Tanzania, representing East African ancestry.
The scale of this, it's incredible. And honestly, the experiment itself sounds almost like something out of a sci-fi movie. They took blood samples from hundreds of perfectly healthy individuals across both continents, and then in the lab, they literally dropped various nasty pathogens directly into these blood samples.
Yeah, they didn't hold back.
We're talking bacteria like E. coli and Streptococcus pneumonia, fungi like Candida, and various viruses.
Exactly. They simulated an infection ex vivo, meaning outside the human body in a controlled environment. So they let the blood incubate with the pathogens for 24 to 48 hours, and then they measured the cytokine explosions that followed.
Oh.
They cataloged inflammatory cytokines like IL-6 and TNF-alpha, alongside anti-inflammatory ones like IL-10.
So they basically created this massive map of exactly how loud the cytokine alarm rang for every single person when exposed to all these different bugs. But how do they actually trace that immune explosion back to a person's DNA?
Through a process called CQTL mapping. That stands for cytokine quantitative trait loci. Basically, they scan the entire genomes of these individuals looking for SNPs, single nucleotide polymorphisms.
Okay, I've always thought of a SNP as a single typo in the genetic code. Like if a gene is a paragraph, a SNP is one single letter being different from the person sitting next to you.
That's a solid analogy, yeah. They were looking for statistical correlations, like does having this specific genetic typo mean your cells produce way more or way less of a specific cytokine when attacked by E. coli? But the crucial step here, the thing that changes the game entirely, is that they ran the CQTL mapping completely separately for males and females.
Now, I have to stop you here because this is the part that I think trips people up. If the typo is in the DNA, and men and women share 22 of the same 23 pairs of chromosomes, how does the exact same typo only affect one sex? I mean, it's the same paragraph of code.
It all comes down to gene expression and the cellular environment. A gene doesn't just turn itself on, right? Mm. It needs transcription factors to bind to the DNA and read it. Think about sex hormones like estrogen and testosterone. They don't just float around in the blood. They actually enter cells, bind to receptors, and those receptors physically attach to the DNA to turn genes on or off.
Oh, I didn't realize they physically attached.
Yeah, so if an SNP, that typo you mentioned, happens to be located right where an estrogen receptor is supposed to bind, that gene's behavior is going to be massively altered in a woman's estrogen-rich body. But it might not matter at all in a man's body. The hardware is the same, but the hormonal software running it is completely different.
That makes so much sense. It's like having a typo in a password. If the man never tries to log into that specific system, the typo doesn't matter. But if the woman's biology is constantly trying to use that password, the typo changes everything.
Exactly. And when you view the data through that lens, the findings from the study are just staggering. Let's look at the Tanzanian cohort. Out of millions of genetic variants, they found 12 that reached strict genome-wide significance for regulating these immune cytokines. How many of those 12 do you think were shared between men and women?
Based on where we're going with this, I'm guessing none of them.
Zero. All 12 were completely sex-specific. 7 only functioned in males, and 5 only functioned in females. It is a remarkable divergence in our biological blueprints.
Okay, let's make this concrete. Give me an example of one of these male-specific volume knobs.
Sure. So they found a variant located in the TOX gene. In men, the specific variant strongly dictates the release of an inflammatory cytokine called IFN-gamma when the blood is exposed to S. pneumonia, which is a bacteria that causes pneumonia.
Let me guess. If the TOX gene is triggering that aggressive cellular defense in men, women must have a completely different pathway for fighting pneumonia, or the gene is just sitting there doing nothing.
It's the latter. In women, that exact same genetic variant is biologically silent in response to that bacteria. And what's vital is understanding what TOX actually does. The TOX gene is critical for the development of T cells and natural killer cells.
Okay.
This points to a highly specific male-biased mechanism for shaping protective cellular immunity. A man's body relies heavily on this specific gene to fight off lung infections, while a woman's body just ignores it entirely.
Wow. I want to look at the other side of the coin with one of the female-specific discoveries from Tanzania. There's a variant in the EGFR gene.
Mm-hmm.
And the data shows that in women, this variant acts like a massive volume knob for IL-10, which is an anti-inflammatory cytokine, specifically after exposure to Coxiella burnetia, which is another nasty bacteria.
The EGFR discovery is brilliant. EGFR stands for epidermal growth factor receptor. In the medical field, we know that EGFR mutations are actually much more prevalent in women who develop lung adenocarcinoma compared to men.
Wait, so a gene famous for driving lung cancer in women is also secretly controlling how their immune system calms down after an infection?
Yes. The fact that this gene is uniquely regulating a major anti-inflammatory cytokine in women suggests they have a distinct female-only mechanism for strong feedback control of inflammation.
That's incredible.
It's a pathway that intimately intersects immune regulation with cellular growth. This is the why behind so many sex differences in disease. The pathways are fundamentally entangled differently.
And just to prove this wasn't an isolated phenomenon in the East African group, the researchers saw the exact same reality mirrored in the Dutch cohort. Environments change, but this sex divide remains constant. They found 12 genome-wide significant variants in the Netherlands group, and 10 of them were completely sex-specific.
Yeah, a great example from the Dutch females is a variant near the ANXA8 gene. It strongly regulates the production of TNF-alpha, which is a major inflammatory alarm bell after exposure to the fungus Candida.
Right, I was reading up on ANXA8, and its primary day job is actually blood coagulation. It functions as an anticoagulant. So finding it as a female-specific regulator of inflammation points to this highly distinct way women might experience the intersection of immune response and blood clotting during severe fungal infections.
It really highlights how multitasking our genes really are and how that multitasking is totally split by sex.
It's like we handed men and women the exact same pieces to build a biological IKEA cabinet. But the instruction manuals are printed in two different languages. The guy's manual says, you know, use the TOX screw to attach the IFN gamma hinge, but the woman's manual doesn't even mention the TOX screw. Hers says, use the EGFR bolt for the IL-10 shelf. You end up with the same physical cabinet of functioning immune response, but the structural integrity of that cabinet relies on totally different load-bearing walls.
That is the perfect way to visualize it. Which brings us to the most shocking revelation of the entire paper. What happens if a scientist tries to read both of those instruction manuals at the exact same time?
You'd get complete gibberish.
And the researchers proved this by doing exactly what traditional science has done for decades. They ran a joint analysis. They deliberately pooled the male and female data back together, controlled for sex as a mere covariate, and reran the statistical mapping.
Let me guess, the signals vanished.
They completely dropped off the map. The vast majority of those highly significant genome-wide signals were no longer statistically significant.
Wow. So if a gene turns the immune response up to a 10 in a woman, but does absolutely nothing in a man, averaging them together just makes it look like a boring 5. The signal gets diluted into background noise. A 5 is a mathematical illusion. It doesn't actually exist in the biology of either the man or the woman.
Exactly. And they verified this illusion using something called colocalization analysis, which calculates posterior probabilities, often referred to as PP1 and PP2 values in the data.
Okay, we need to translate that. What does a posterior probability actually mean for the listener?
Imagine looking at two shadows on a wall and trying to mathematically prove they are cast by two entirely different objects, not just one weirdly shaped object that happens to look like two. This analysis is a rigorous statistical way of asking, are we sure these genetic signals in men and women aren't just overlapping? Are they truly unshared?
And what do the math say?
The math proved with near 90% certainty that the genetic triggers for men and women were completely separate objects. They are entirely unshared. And if we connect this to the bigger picture,
yeah,
it forces us to ask a deeply uncomfortable question about the last 20 years of genomic research. By treating human genetics as a single monolith, how many vital discoveries have we missed?
Seriously, how many targeted therapies for autoimmune diseases or severe infections have failed in late-stage clinical trials because the drug was targeting an average pathway that doesn't actually exist in half the population?
It is a sobering thought for anyone in drug development. I mean, if a trial has 50% men and 50% women, and the drug only works on the male pathway, the overall efficacy looks terrible, and the drug just gets scrapped. Meanwhile, it could have been a miracle cure for men. Or conversely, a drug that perfectly regulates a woman's hyperactive immune system is deemed too inconsistent because it does absolutely nothing for the men in the trial.
That is wildly frustrating, but also, you know, incredibly hopeful, because now we know what to look for. But let's bring this out of the petri dish and into the real world. How do these microscopic genetic variations actually translate into the diseases you and I might get in our lifetimes?
Well, to connect the genetic typos to real diseases, the researchers used a massive database called PhenoScanner. It allows you to take these newly discovered variants and cross-reference them against decades of clinical data to see what real-world health conditions they are linked to. This relies on a biological concept called pleiotropy.
Pleiotropy.
Yeah.
That's when one single gene can affect multiple seemingly unrelated traits, right? Like a genetic Swiss Army knife.
That's right. One tool, multiple completely different uses depending on what you need. Now, it's important to note they did find some shared traits. For instance, in the Dutch cohort, there was a variant near the TLR1, TLR6, TLR10 locus. This specific typo regulated immune responses equally in both men and women.
Okay.
And when they ran that through PhenoScanner, it was famously linked to shared conditions like asthma, allergies, and general white blood cell count.
So the stuff that affects all of us equally shows up equally in the genetics. That makes logical sense. But what about those sex-specific volume knobs we talked about earlier, the ones that disappeared when we averaged them out?
This is where the clinical implications get huge. That male-specific TOX variant, the one that controls the T-cell response to pneumonia, is strongly linked in the database to skin cancer and diabetes.
Wait, really? A gene fighting off lung infections is tied to skin cancer in men?
Yes. It highlights how a man's overall immune vigilance is tied together in ways we are just beginning to map out. But one of the most surprising discoveries was a variant in the CNTNEP gene found in the Tanzanian females. In this immune study, it regulated the cytokine response to tuberculosis. But historically in the medical literature, CNTNAP2 is known as a major neurodevelopmental gene.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's associated with a female biased risk for dyslexia, language impairment, and other cognitive traits.
This is blowing my mind. So a gene that affects how a woman's brain develops, how she processes language, is secretly moonlighting as the commander of her immune response against a deadly lung infection.
It is a stunning example of neuroimmune crosstalk. The genes wiring our brains are literally talking to the genes fighting off pathogens, and they're having a completely different conversation based on whether they reside in a male or female body. We've known the nervous system and the immune system communicate, but finding the exact sex-specific genetic switches that control that communication is groundbreaking.
So what does this all mean? Like, for the person listening to this right now, why should they care that their CNTNAP2 or TOX genes are behaving differently than their partners?
It means everything for the future of personalized medicine. We are entering an era where we want to create highly tailored interventions. If we want to cure autoimmune diseases like lupus or rheumatoid arthritis, which disproportionately devastate women's lives, or if we want to improve survival rates for non-reproductive cancers, which strike men harder, we cannot use a single unified map.
Right.
We cannot design a drug that suppresses a cytokine pathway if that pathway is load-bearing in a woman but entirely irrelevant in a man. We have to acknowledge that male and female immune systems operate on fundamentally different genetic hardware.
Okay, let's wrap this all up. What we've learned from this incredible deep dive into the source material from the Tanzanian and Dutch cohorts is that our immune systems are not built from a universal human blueprint. We now have definitive genome-wide proof that common genetic variants pull entirely different biological levers depending on sex. Averaging those differences doesn't find the truth, it actually hides it, blurring two distinct biological realities into a mathematical illusion.
And this raises an important question, and it's something I want everyone listening to really mull over. If the very genetic switches that control our moment-to-moment survival against deadly pathogens are this distinctly divided by sex, what other fundamental biological systems are we currently misunderstanding?
That's a great point.
Think about how we metabolize the food we eat, how our brains process sleep, how we react to everyday stress or trauma, how much of our basic medical knowledge is built on an average that doesn't actually represent anyone.
It really makes you look at the medicine cabinet completely differently. The next time someone jokes about the man flu, or, you know, you wonder why a medication works flawlessly for you but leaves your friend with terrible side effects, remember this conversation. keep questioning those averages you encounter in the world. The muddy waters of diagnosis and treatment are finally starting to clear up, but only because science is finally willing to look at the right maps.
Exactly.
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science base by base.
Under bright screens in a late night lab, numbers glow with the quiet answers high. Same stimulus, same river in the vein, but two different currents decide. Split the signal, watch it rearrange. What looks the same won't stay the same. A single letter can tilt the scale.
Same blood.
Two keys in the same blood.
Turning different doors.
Precision needs the split.